The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Are you okay?
Yeah, there's no take backsies, but my Celsius just went everywhere.
Oh, no.
That's fine.
The Boston Red Sox dropped the series opener to the New York Yankees, breaking up a no-hitter all too late and falling by a score of 4-1. Their record drops to 81 wins, 67 losses. I'm Nick the Voice, joined by Terry Cushman Jr., and we are the Bastards of Boston. Want more? Go to bastardsofbostonbaseball.com for great written articles. And I apologize so you clean up the Celsius right now.
It's all I got. You know, we're live, so I can't go to the kitchen.
That's definitely the first time, you know, I've smiled since watching this game, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, the New York Yankees really tried their best to give us this one. There were throwing errors, caught stealing. There was a balk. At one point, there was a batted ball that hit a base runner, resulting in an out. There was a botched call where it was Jazz Chisholm who came home, and us in the war room, we all thought he was safe. He certainly thought he was safe. He threw a little tantrum, went over to Aaron Boone, said, let's challenge it. But, I mean, they called him out. I'm really surprised because it did look like Narvaez missed the tag, which combined with the catcher's interference, just a very frustrating game. Very frustrating in general. I mean, Lucas Giolito, he worried me at times. I thought he settled down all right by the end of it. But ultimately, this loss comes down to the bats. I mean, getting shown up by Luis Hill like they did. Four walks, no hits across six innings. It was just shameful.
It's almost like Narvaez said, everyone take the night off from effing up. I'm going to do it all myself, except for the Hamilton thing, but you expect that at this point. I don't know if you caught it, but I think it was at the end of the first inning. There was a catcher's interference that inning, and it ended the inning. They went to commercial. Boone came running out because he was signaling the challenge, and no one saw it, and so he wasn't allowed to do it. And at the time, it was big because they were only up 1-0. And so Narvaez got away with it, and then he didn't on the next one, and it led to at least one run that inning. And he's throwing the ball all over the infield, you know, trying to get guys out. He wasn't. Jazz Chisholm, as you mentioned, was stealing at will. So, I mean, the big thing for me is, like, who is not Narvaez? He was the next coming. Like, Wong started April, was the everyday catcher, gets hurt. Narvaez comes in, becomes a revelation, and then the All-Star break hits, and he disappears. And he's not gunning guys down, or at least it doesn't seem like he is anymore. And I just, there's not a lot of upside there. And I'm just wondering, I don't think he's tired. I mean, Wong's getting at bats. So who is he? Who is the real Carlos Narvaez?
It's a really good question, and it's something that, you know, unfortunately, we'll just have to wait to see. I mean, the dude clearly has a relatively high ceiling of at least, I would say, an average everyday catcher. He just needs to figure it out. I don't know what he was doing differently back, you know, 2-3 months ago. I don't know what the league maybe figured out about him. I don't know how much that, I think it was his knee, right, for a while. I don't know how much that was bothering him. We were carrying Ollie Sanchez. And, you know, the thing with Narvaez is just, like, he'll show flashes, you know. You'll see him swing the bat and say, there he is, he's back. And then it's just, he sort of falls into where he has become, which is just in this rut. And unfortunately, the lineup isn't deep enough right now to compensate for that. You know, guys like Rafaela, Hamilton, Eaton getting starts. You know, you really need every single hitter to step up. And when you have Narvaez batting sixth, like tonight, Yoshida batting fifth, it just, it really feels like it's just an uphill battle.
You know, Narvaez was one of the guys that just kind of, you know, when we had that early run, once we got above 500, I mean, we stayed that last time. And, you know, he was a big part of that. And the rest of the teams got either injured or cold. I mean, Alex Bregman continues to not really be a major factor. He hasn't been terrible, but not the impact guy that you need him to be. And it's just, I don't like the way we're trending. I mean, we're definitely a playoff team. I sarcastically tweeted out earlier, both playoff games are going to be pretty lame because at this point we might only get two. And I don't know. I mean, we're just not taking that step forward. We kicked the crap out of Oakland for a couple games, for what that's worth. They're one of the worst home run prone pitching staffs in Major League Baseball. Maybe that stadium doesn't help, but yeah. And then just everybody's cold though. Story's cold. Bregman's cold. Narvaez is cold. Who's hot? Maybe Romy, but he's got a knee issue, I guess.
Yeah. It really is one of those things where the team just can't seem to deliver in those crucial moments yet again. And that's been a narrative all season long. You know, the most frustrating part of Luis Hill's no-hitter through six innings is that with those four walks, there were opportunities. There were guys in scoring position. There were times, especially right at the end, where it looked like, oh, we finally got to this guy. We finally figured him out. He's shaken. And maybe we can score some runs. And we just couldn't get it done. Overall, 0-for-8 on the night with runners in scoring position. The only run coming from a Nate Eaton solo shot, which was very nice, granted, but it was also in the bottom of the seventh inning after we had just gone from, you know, 2-1 or 2-0 rather to 4-0, you know, so 4-1 felt a little bit better. But honestly, going into that eighth inning saying, oh, we're only down by 3 earlier in the season, you'd say, oh, a comeback is possible at this point. I said, we have 6 outs to score 3 runs. I don't think this lineup's getting it done. And unfortunately, they didn't even really put up too much of a fight.
Honestly, I mean, in a game like this, the only team that was going to beat the Yankees was the Yankees themselves. If they just, you know, if one of their relievers didn't have it, I think they had Devin Williams in there in the eighth inning, if I'm not mistaken. And so he's a guy that could certainly blow it for you, but he was fairly solid. Really, the only inning they had where the Red Sox looked like they could do something was the fifth inning with Luis Gil. They had runners on second and third, and I don't think they got a run in. Duran had that piss missile, but it was right at the left fielder. So it's frustrating. And we've got someone in the stream complaining about Massa, Will Graham, and, you know, just still dribbling them to either second or first. And then I felt like Nathaniel Lowe was getting cold. He had 3 strikeouts tonight in his 4 at-bats. Last 15 games, he's hitting .208 with a .269 on base. And then if you go back just to the last 7, he is 3 for his last 25 with 11 strikeouts. So it's first base is starting to become a black hole once again.
Yeah, and there's only so long that I think a questionable player, which he had been all year long for Washington, and you can say that was Washington's fault, but, you know, it's only so long before the duct tape starts to wear off and things become unstuck. You know, he wasn't that great in the Athletic series. I think he actually went hitless in that series. Only walking once. overall, his September has been okay. He still has a little bit of power, but not really hitting the ball, like you mentioned. And it's just a shame, you know. The lineup is getting thinner and thinner. At one point, we were talking about this this beautiful logjam in the outfield, and now, you know, we're praying. Roman Anthony, Willy Abreu, these two guys disappear, and it's like everyone disappears.
Yeah, you mentioned Abreu. It sounds like he could be back after the weekend. Was that right? It'll be this week. It'll be against Oakland or Tampa. And I saw a tweet today. Cora says he's running at 85%. And that's a very specific number. But I wanted to sarcastically respond, like, how do we know it's not really like 82%? Like, how does the metric, you know, get there? But I didn't. And I saved my snide remarks for the game. But yeah, and I mean, you could obviously use Abreu. I don't know what we're going to get. I mean, he's so streaky. I bet he'll probably be hot for a few games coming out. He's just the type of guy that gets amped up, but not a guy I really trust. If you need a big week, I don't know if he's going to give it to you.
Yeah,
as much as you need, but instantly he'll probably be your best power threat back in the lineup
without question. Especially, you know, Yoshida has become automatic. He's been automatic, you know, all year, and not like Chapman has been. You know, there's the two different sides of what the automatic can mean. Yoshida grounds out so incredibly consistently. I mean, you could put money on it. You really could, and you'd make a mint. You know, it's unbelievable. The guy, unfortunately, I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know if his swing just isn't made for the MLB anymore. I don't know what's going on, but the dude has lost any semblance of the player that he was the past 2 years, where at least you could say, oh, well, he's a slap hitter. Oh, well, he gets on base. Oh, he's a decent guy for that. This year, unfortunately, barring a couple of good games, the dude is just terrible. I mean, he's slugging .329 right now. At a glance, I thought that was his on base. I was like, oh, well, that's not too bad. Oh, no, never mind. He's, even when he does hit, it's almost exclusively singles. And it's just, it's a brutal watch, especially for a DH on what's supposed to be a playoff contending team.
I don't know what you do. I mean, you can't hide him. And there were some rumors, maybe right before the September call-ups, that perhaps he does get DFA'd. But I don't know. I mean, until the Red Sox eat money on a DFA, I don't know. I can't speak with any optimism that they'll just do what they have to do to make the team better. And I can't think of, in recent memory, going back at least a decade, a bigger addition by subtraction than there could be with Masataki Yoshida.
I agree wholeheartedly. I mean, especially when Abreu does come back and you know, Roman Anthony eventually, and, you know, get Ref Snyder or Romy. I mean, anyone. Just anyone at this point, figure something out. You cannot have a DH with an OPS of, if I'm doing the math right, I believe it's 610 right now. You just can't. It is completely unreasonable to roll this guy out. And the worst part of that OPS is that he looks like a 610 OPS hitter out there. You know, it's not like a dude who's flying out to left and right and you think, oh man, there's a warning track shot. Oh man, that was a great play. It's just the same thing every time. He may as well be striking out. In fact, maybe if he just struck out, it would actually be better, because at least there's no chance for a double play on those balls. The dude is just, unfortunately, He's just not going to get better. That's sort of where I'm feeling right now. He's 32 years old. He's just not going to figure it out, I don't think, at this point. Maybe he can work on something in the offseason, but as far as 2025 is concerned, this is who Masataka Yoshida is, and ultimately, he is costing us games.
There's not really a lot I could add to that. I just dream of the day when we get that alert. I don't think it would be a passing bomb. I think it'd probably be a Cotillo bomb. He would probably have it first, or Alex Spear, one of the two. But man, if you were on this crew that off season when we got him, I was so mad. I mean, how many hitters from the Asian market ever really work out? Before him, it was only a handful. It was Ohtani, who's the unicorn. I mean, he might be the best player of this decade. I can't think of another one that was, well, Soto, I guess. But, I mean, you have to go back to Mike Trout 2012 through 2018, I think, to get to where Ohtani is right now with the bat. And Judge, yeah, I guess. So I guess there's a couple. But yeah, so I mean, and then getting back to the Asian market, you had Hideki Matsui, Shinsu Chu, and there's been some other guys. I mean, Seiya Suzuki is okay. It seems like the Cubs seem to want to try to trade him all the time, and I guess he's DHing now. But and then you've got Haesung Kim, who's been pretty good. But typically, from the offensive side, there's just not a lot of Asian market players that have ever really come up and justified a big contract. From the pitching side, it's worked out, and the Red Sox have a great history of that, you know, especially in the bullpen. And I would still say Dice K was, you know, I think he was worthwhile. You got a couple of good seasons out of him, and I love to point out the RBI double in game 3 or 4 of the World Series that he smacked to really put you ahead in that one. But that was like the most unlikely. It was an RBI. It was a 2 RBI single is what it was. My bad. But yeah. So, and then finally I'm like, Yoshida isn't going to work. And he was a monster in the WBC, and he had like what, 2 good months. I was kind of eating crow a little bit, kind of starting to think, okay, maybe I'll be wrong on this. And then I wasn't, and I haven't been. So it's so frustrating. I hope we don't do it again. I'm never going to believe the hype in anyone from over there. And I'll gladly take the L if another team takes the risk, signs the player, and he becomes a stud. I just don't want, you're gambling, you know, and the odds are not with you. So
100%, you know, there's better odds on betting on Masataka Yoshida to hit a ground ball to second base, you know, honestly. And, you know, like we said before, it's too shallow of a lineup right now to hide guys like that, especially, I mean, Duran and Bregman, they're not having good months so far. You know, I have their OPS up in September so far. Duran's got a 632. Bregman's got a 544. The slump continues. And for your top two guys, who are really two of your only hitters outside of Trevor Story, who's just been a force of nature really every month. I mean, since that big slump of his earlier in the season, I mean, you need Duran and Bregman. You need everyone. You need to kind of get blood from a stone here. And, you know, I was talking, you know, either my last appearance or one before that, but about how we need to count on guys like Eaton or Sogard to sort of have a big performance suddenly. But Eaton had a big performance tonight. He got a solo shot, you know, got one of those runs back. But unfortunately, it doesn't matter if an unlikely guy like Eaton gets a good home run. If ultimately Duran goes hitless like he did tonight, Bregman did get on base twice with a single and a walk. But, you know, then Story, who's been unbelievably hot all year, really, he goes hitless. Nate Lowe, like you said, continues to struggle. And then we sort of get to the soft part of the order, which isn't all that comparatively soft to the top at this point, really. It's hard to watch. It's very hard to watch, especially when you do have a decent pitching performance from a guy like Lucas Giolito tonight, who, despite, you know, like I mentioned, despite early struggles and a couple moments where I was like, ooh, he's going to get himself into a sticky situation, he gave up 1 earned run ultimately in 5.2 innings, and you can't really sneeze at that.
Giolito, it was definitely a step in the right direction, and you desperately need Giolito to be 80% of what he was throughout that first half of the summer. Crochet's, you know, was very good, albeit against, I think, Oakland. Bayo has been consistent from start to finish. And, you know, if you're going to, if you're dreaming, and I think that's all it is a dream of a deep October run, Giolito has to be healthy. I mean, I'm out on Tolley for 2025. I don't want to hear it. I'm an optimist long term, but I'm not. Don't mess with it, you know, for the rest of the year. And then you have that Connolly early guy. He's got to do something about the first name. It just doesn't flow. It doesn't flow.
Like, it's his, a strange one.
His mom has to be about my age, and she named him Connolly. You know, I just like, you gotta shorten it up or do something. But he'll get his, I'm assuming he'll get a start against Oakland again, since they can't hit lefties and they'll just run that back. He may as well, right? So I don't know who he is or what he is, but I mean, he's better than Tolley.
Yeah, for sure. I'm with you on Tolley. I mean, this is a guy who had been operating on long rest really his entire career in the in professional baseball. You don't want a guy like that to be forced to be a savior, and it's unfair to expect him to be. You know, he's only 22 years old. I agree with you on Connolly early. He does sound like a Civil War general.
He does. That's it. That is it.
Genuinely, it does sound like he would be found at Gettysburg. But, you know, he looked decent. I mean, again, Tolley looked great his first outing. When it comes to the young guns, unfortunately, you just got to take what you can get. I mean, Harrison looked solid, I thought, in his debut. So hopefully we can figure something out, patch something together. Dustin May going to the IL was a blessing in disguise, hopefully. Maybe not even in disguise. It might have just been a blessing outright. But, you know, now, unfortunately, Bernardino joining him, and as opposed to May, I have my suspicions. It's sort of like a Phantom IL thing. Bernardino, unfortunately, is probably a real IL stint, and it's tough. You know, Wilson came out tonight, didn't look good. You know, yet again, he's had some struggles lately. Zach Kelly came out, didn't look good. You know, didn't give up a run somehow, despite three base runners allowed. Chris Murphy looked solid, definitely worked around that late error by Hamilton. But, you know, the bullpen, it's very top heavy, but middle relief has been a concern all year long. You know, you go back to Alcala, that didn't work out. You look at Zach Kelly, Isaiah Campbell. I mean, these quote unquote low leverage guys, they come in to a game and all you're saying is, all right, just try to keep it close. And they end up giving up three base runners in one inning. It's tough to watch. Hopefully the offense can figure it out and the starting rotation and all this, but it's a bad combination of factors right now. And it leads to frustrating losses, having great closers and setup men, having a solid three members, at least of a starting rotation, but an offense in middle relief that can't seem to get it done. I mean, it leads to losses like 4-1. And it's just frustrating.
And then, unfortunately, in the last game of the Oakland series, I mean, Chapman can only carry you so far. I mean, he's going to have a bad night, and he did. And so you took the L there. But, yeah, I just – if you're two runs behind and it's like the sixth inning, like, what do you do? Like, you might be sabotaging yourself by bringing in anybody but Whitlock or Chapman. And, you know, Murphy tonight looked good, but for some reason, I just don't trust him. He can go on a run where he'll be lights out for a few weeks. And if we're lucky, that's what this is the start of. But I don't know. And Bernardino is a guy I trust, by the way, and you just lost him. And I thought we lost someone else too, to an injury. I could be wrong. And getting over to Dustin May, it's like, you should DFA him, really. But what are the optics of that if you're Craig Breslow? You're DFAing your botched move. So by putting him on the injured list, you're kind of buying yourself some time as far as admitting you were wrong about a move you shouldn't have made.
Most definitely. You know, on the broadcast tonight, Apple put up a graphic where it showed all of the American League contenders, the guys who are fighting it out for wild card teams like us, the Yankees, the Royals, the Rangers, and the Mariners, I think it was. I think that was the five that they showed. And it showed their deadline moves. And to put us in a group with those other four, it looks like one team is not like the other. You have four teams that made a serious effort to improve themselves. And we can laugh at the Yankees super pen. God knows I have. We can laugh at the Royals' demise. We can do all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, these are teams that said, hey, we have a shot here. This American League, and really league as a whole, this is wide open. We can get to the World Series and give ourselves a shot if we have the right moves here. And so you have the Rangers get a guy like Kelly, who we should have gotten. I wanted him badly. And you have to wonder where we'd be. Now the Rangers are weathering their injuries, and they're red hot, as members of chat are pointing out right now. I mean, Texas is doing great. The Royals, not so much, trending in the wrong direction, but you can at least say they tried. I think they made like six or seven moves, if I recall correctly, including getting Mike Yastrzemski from the Giants, and that worked out fantastic for them. So we all were concerned about the deadline when it happened. Red Sox fans were sickened by it. Going into it, we were cynical. And unfortunately, it's appearing like all of our worst fears are coming to light as we sort of limp towards October and where other teams are playing some of their best baseball of the season. The Yankees have been playing well. The Rangers have been playing well. We are just kind of treading water, trying to keep our heads above.
I mean, Merrill Kelly, if you go get Merrill Kelly and Eugenio Suarez, you're probably not giving up a top five prospect for either one, I'm guessing. I mean, neither package should have been that costly, but you're a much different team at that point. And why did we lose those trades? Like, why didn't we execute? And I think the Yankees pen is going to be fine. I don't know if I love the Ryan McMahon move with all that money and a couple years of control. They probably should have went and got a rental, but I mean, it was a move, and he drove in at least one of the runs tonight. And yeah, so I don't know. And I'm looking at the standings and I'm not that comfortable all of a sudden. You know, the Texas Rangers and the Seattle Mariners are white hot right now. Both have won 5 and 6 games in a row, respectively. Texas is 3 games behind us right now. They got 78 wins. We got 81. You got Oakland, so that should help, but it's not over yet.
Yeah, it certainly isn't. I mean, this is a wide open wild card race where it's not decided. The order of the teams is not in stone. And unfortunately, I mean, if you look at run differential, especially, you know, I remember when us and the Yankees were kind of at the top, the Blue Jays were kind of a joke. We were calling them frauds. They've completely turned that narrative around. And at this point, the Rangers' run differential is only 8 points off from our own. We're at plus 104 right now. They're at plus 96. It's tough. It's really tough. And it's hard to look at the Rangers team who's playing such good baseball and say they deserve to be on the outside. Same thing to say about the Mariners. Really, the only one that you could say deserves to be on the outside out of those wildcard teams are the Boston Red Sox. We're not playing like we are serious. This was a crucial game tonight, set the tone for the series, hopefully walk away with, you know, a series win, go 2-1. You don't need a sweep, go 2-1. You've absolutely dominated the Yankees at that point in the regular season. And you have, once again, leapfrogged them in the standings. And instead, we go out there and we make Luis Hill look like, you know, I take your pick, you know, from all the greats in the past. Luis Hill is a solid pitcher, don't get me wrong, but he was shaky at points tonight. And despite that, we just seem to bail him out.
He's had trouble with walks his whole career so far. This is only his second or third year. I think he was rookie of the year last year. And you can't really compare him to Bayo because Bayo never really had a walk problem, but you know, he's figuring it out, Luis Hill. And, you know, and Bayo spent really up until this year trying to figure it out. So, you know, similar paths, I guess. And I thought he was a guy we could get to if we were on, you know, if maybe Duran could have punched a couple through Bregman, maybe you just have that one big inning. Like, how many games have we won this year because you had a big fourth or fifth inning where you put up three or four? But it didn't happen. And, you know, you've got, I forget what the order is. I know it's Bayo and Crochet. It must be Bayo tomorrow, right?
Yeah, it is.
Let me get the matchups up. It's a big series because if for some reason you get swept, that the math is hard as far as finishing ahead of the Yankees, at least. And then, you know, you've got Seattle and Texas breathing down your neck. And I think Seattle is sick of losing. They're sick of being the August and September choke artists. They made a lot of moves. Jerry DePoto makes a ton of moves. Like, if that guy isn't cooking up a trade for most of the year, I don't know if he'd know what to do with himself. And he's probably on the hot seat as well. So you got the Mariners coming up and they've got great pitching. And then you've got Texas doing almost exactly what they did in 2023, just not really on the radar until they heated up. And they have Bruce Bochy. And honestly, I don't know if Bochy is a good manager or not. I mean, he has to be okay. He's won a bunch of championships, I think four now. But there's just something about that late season magic with him. And I don't know what Alex Cora is.
Yeah, I don't know either, you know, and I don't even know if Alex Cora knows what Alex Cora is right now. This is a team that unfortunately is being held together by paperclips in a dream. And I mean, this final stretch here, it's going to be hard to watch. You know, hopefully, like you said, Abreu, when he comes back, hopefully he goes on a heater. But I mean, are we going to have the nuts to bench Yoshida? You know, are we going, because every game matters at this point. This is essentially the red carpet that leads up to the playoffs. This is the stairway to it, where you kind of need to manage all of these games like they're the playoffs, because a bad stretch here, a bad series, and suddenly we're not in the playoffs. You know, we need to play the Yankees hard. We're going to need to play the Tigers and the Blue Jays hard, and the Athletics and I believe the Rays. Yes, the Athletics and the Rays hard as well. Every single game counts. You can't just rest on your hands and say, oh, well, we're a wild card team. That is no longer a guarantee.
The real interesting thing going forward here is the pressure is on. How do they handle it? Are they going to be choking and booting the ball around because they can't, you know, impose their will on these teams to get back to where they need to? Or will they impose their will? Like, that's the thing. And if I'm Craig Breslow, I want that Billy Bean moment in Moneyball where I'm going to shake things up. And obviously you can't make external moves at this point, but DFA Yoshida, call up Campbell, do something to change the energy. And I don't think there's anybody else on the farm you can call up. I don't think we want the password up after that, whatever that was. And let's just see what Campbell can do. First base is a black hole. Maybe that's the energy you're looking for. And, you know, he hits from the right side, which couldn't hurt. I mean, all our lefties are probably injured now that I think about it. But that's what I would do. Maybe Campbell coming back gets Rafaela fired up and maybe he starts hitting again. He's been, as someone said in the chat, I don't know if it was George or Jules, but he's been ice cold. So that's what I would do. Do something to change the energy, change the vibe. And at least he did something.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, really at this point, repaint the walls in the clubhouse. I mean, figure something out. Try something. You know, Rafaela tonight did get two walks, which was a bit encouraging, especially for a guy like him. It was funny because five walks on the night, you see five walks and you think, okay, wow, we, you know, the offense, we're patient, we're disciplined, and we were to some extent, but I mean, we just couldn't actually hit the ball, which is kind of crucial, unfortunately. But you're absolutely right. I mean, we need everyone. We need the vibe to change and we need everyone to become the best version of themselves. Is it too late for that? No, technically speaking, but it's certainly not encouraging watching this month. You know, we really could have swept the A's. I think I maybe won't say should have swept the A's, but we easily could have. And that would have helped. I mean, every loss right now that we could have turned into a win is coming back to haunt us. And remember those games way back in April that Alex Cora said, well, it's early, we didn't need to win this. We get to a point in the season where you really wish a one-run loss here and there, an extra innings loss there. You really wish you had a couple of those back, because if you take two of our losses and turn them into wins, we are in a significantly better position.
You couldn't have said it any better. Every game matters. It absolutely does. The Oakland finale hurts. And I mean, you've lost a lot of close games as well, you know, in the last couple weeks. I don't know. I mean, I hope this isn't 2011, and that's probably not a good comparison because that team was a wagon. You know, that team was just loaded with either perennial all-stars and probably Hall of Famers. And then if you remember 2021, we tried to blow it. You know, it came down to that. We had to sweep the Nationals, and we were extremely fortunate that that was the last series of the season. This time it's Detroit, and Tarek Skubal left the game early. I don't know what it was. Nothing was obvious, and perhaps it might have just been more precautionary, but you're still going to end the season with Detroit, and that's a far cry from the Nationals team that you ended with in 2021. I'm convinced we're going to be the third wild. If we get in, we're going to be the third wild card, and gun to my head, I still believe that that's probably where we will finish, but you're not going to have a home game in that first round, and we'll see. And like I said, just a few minutes ago, the pressure's on. How are they going to handle it?
Yeah. And, you know, to add, you know, to the negativity, I guess, is the idea that the Tigers and the Blue Jays are kind of in an arms race for who's going to get that first overall seed. Some people would say that getting the first overall seed is actually a negative. You know, and I can see that the idea of having to sit and watch as other teams play baseball, if you believe in momentum, that can definitely be a momentum killer. That being said, if the Tigers and the Blue Jays are still in that moment in the final three games of the series, or excuse me, the season, where they are fighting to see who's number one, then the Tigers have no reason to go easy on us. You know, they have no reason to sit back and say, oh, let's keep our guys healthy. Oh, let's skip a start for this guy. Oh, let's, you know, it really is going to be them focused on themselves. And that is going to be a tough team to overcome. It's going to be a playoff preview, much like we've been getting all year long.
I think if the Yankees continue to win, I think the Yankees are going to win one of the next two. So I think they're going to come out of this series better, you know, in better shape than we are. Oh, actually, though, yeah. So that take wasn't going to work. I was going to say I was thinking the Yankees would keep the Tigers honest, but you can't have the Blue Jays and the Yankees in the 1 and 2 seeds. So I don't know. And Cleveland's a little too far back for Detroit to worry, but who knows? I mean, if Seattle heats up and just goes on a disgusting run, who's to say they can't snag one of those top seeds? But I don't think it's going to be us. And it's just, I don't know. We're in for a heart attack finish, I think. That in that Oakland series, I know that we destroyed them in two of those games, but if that goes sideways, I think that's like the code red for what this team really might be.
Most definitely. You know, I just pulled up our season splits for the team just to double check on the numbers for the one run losses, the extra inning losses. And yeah, in one run games, we are 20-25, which, you know, you want that to be as close to 500 as possible. I mean, ideally you want it to be completely over, but realistically speaking, one run games, you hope, you know, you win one here, you lose one there. It's kind of chance. I think the most frustrating part of those one run games, though, is that if I'm doing the math correctly, 167 runs allowed divided by the 45 games total, we only gave up on average 3.7 runs in those one run games. Which you'd really hope that the Boston Red Sox, being a on paper good offense, certainly earlier in the year, you'd really hope that, oh, our pitching staff only held them to 3 to 4 runs. You'd win more than you'd lose in that situation. But unfortunately, we only scored 162, you know, across that same span. In extras, we're 7-12. Again, you'd like that to be as close to 500 as possible. The percentage is 368. And then we are a game under 500 on the road this year. That's been something that, you know, you've brought up. I've heard other people bring up the idea that the Red Sox are a force to be reckoned with in Fenway, which they are, 44-28. But on the road, we lose a lot of our magic. And unfortunately, this team needs all the magic it can get. A good August, so far an okay September. But, I mean, we need more than just okay. We need some excellent baseball. And unless we turn it on against potentially one of the toughest stretches of the year on our schedule, it's really not looking good.
You know, the back end of the rotation is a big problem, as we've covered. The bullpen's a big problem and the lineup's a big problem. So you get a lot of problems. So I don't know. I mean, we haven't been built like a playoff team. They just overachieved to get us at least into the position that we're in. And we finally had a good rotation for the first time in a long time. Three guys you felt pretty good about for most of the season. And, you know, the back end is what it is. We've had a mix of people, but I don't know. We're just along for the ride. I can't.
Yeah.
That's just all it is. And we got Bayo tomorrow.
Yep. That's right.
So let's just go through the matchups. Who's
on tomorrow's game. We have a 4 PM or 4:10 rather PM Eastern Daylight Time start. That's going to be Max Fried versus Brian Bello, who has been good versus the Yankees all season long, really his whole career, I think. And then on Sunday, we have a 7:10 ESPN game, and that will be Will Warren versus Garrett Crochet. How are you feeling?
All right, so the Max Fried-Brian Bello game is a rematch from late July, and we won that game 1-0. We had a much better offense at the time. Some guys hadn't been hurt yet, and I think we were just kind of hot. And so I don't know. I mean, the Yankees, Aaron Judge is just chasing history. I mean, I forget who he tied tonight. I think it was DiMaggio, or maybe he pulled one ahead. But, you know, he's well on his way to being one of the greatest Yankees of the 21st century. And he's got some narratives that he needs to get rid of. And so, you know, he's going to be tough the rest of the series. Jazz Chisholm just shows up, at least in the Red Sox series. And he was stealing bases at will tonight. I think he stole third once or twice. So I don't know. I'm going to take the Yankees in game two on Saturday, and I'll take the Red Sox in the Garrett Crochet start.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty fair assessment. I'm probably thinking similar. Part of me is holding out hope that maybe Brian Bello just shoves, which he's capable of for sure. I mean, on paper, this is a great matchup, you know. Max Fried hasn't been great lately. I mean, he's coming off a very shaky August. He had three pretty bad games at the start of it, settled down at the end. But I'm thinking it's probably like maybe 60-40 Yankees for me in that game. Meanwhile, Garrett Crochet, you got to have faith in, that's your guy. Will Warren is all right. I mean, he's been pretty good lately, you know, which is worrisome, but you just got to trust your ace. I agree with you. I think we'll probably lose tomorrow, ultimately losing the series, but avoid the sweep. And ultimately that would make us 9-4 versus the Yankees, I think, on the season. So really good versus the Yankees in the regular season, unfortunately versus the rest of the league, apparently just maybe not good enough.
Fried has actually been good in his last three. He's gone 7 innings in all of them, gave up just one earned run in two of those, and then Toronto got him for three. But that's a really pesky offense that Toronto has, and finally they're putting it together. The one thing about Fried is he's not really piling up the strikeouts, so we'll see how that goes. But Romy should be in the lineup, so he's one of your lefty killers. Rob Refsnyder, it felt like he was ice cold, but he did have a big game against Oakland, so maybe he can reignite something. Fried is a lefty, so if you're holding out hope, those are a couple of things to look out for. But I think the Yankees are going to win the Saturday, and Crochet's been hot and cold. I mean, it's not an automatic win by any means, but he had a very good start against Oakland, and hopefully he continue. It's in uncharted territory as far as his workload. So that's, and he might've been tipping in one of those outings, whichever one he got tuned up for 7 runs. I forget who that was against, but we'll see. It's compelling. Every game is compelling from here out. This is a race, and I would actually call it a dogfight.
You're absolutely right. You know, what's going to be really interesting about tomorrow is I think Fried and Bello are both guys who, you know, they pitch to their defense, right? So I think that both the Yankees and the Red Sox after tonight, which was just absolutely sloppy baseball all around from both sides, I think that both sides are going to have to go into their locker room tonight and ultimately tomorrow and just say, we got to tune this up. We got to figure this out. And ultimately, this might come down to whoever wins is the side that just didn't commit an error at the wrong time.
It could come down to that. And I'm trying to figure out how to keep Hamilton out of there, but you can't. You're just too injured. I mean, what if you bring Rafaela in, you've got Duran, probably Ref Snyder tomorrow. Who would be your other, I guess, Eaton?
I guess so, yeah.
That's how you solve the David Hamilton problem. You've got your black, well, not so much defensively, but Nathaniel Lowe is a pretty good defender. So your infield is probably fine if you wanna bring Rafaela in. But man, just look at this roster right now.
It's tough. You know, we're running on fumes. And I think I'd be remiss, too, if I didn't mention this on the show tonight, that Walker Buehler did pitch for the Phillies tonight.
You're laughing. It couldn't have gone good.
No, he gave up a run in the first inning. Oh. I thought, oh, the Royals are going to figure him out. Please shell him for us. But no, he ultimately settled in. Five innings pitched, five hits, one walk, one earned run, only three strikeouts. I mean, the Royals offense isn't exactly on fire. So... You know, it's maybe not the biggest condemnation, you know, of the Red Sox or anything like that. Not the biggest compliment to Walker Buehler that he was able to shut down that offense. But you know what? Kudos to him.
I'll tell you what. If the Phillies make the World Series, and I think they were my pick, and I know they've lost Wheeler, which is probably why they have Buehler now. I hope Buehler's the World Series MVP.
If he goes on another October run and does exactly in free agency what he did to us this year to another team, I do think that would actually be pretty incredible just from a narrative standpoint.
I've wanted so bad for Dave Dombrowski to win a championship there. And in his defense, I mean, he's given them a good roster every year. He didn't mess around with Girardi. He got him out of there. And I hope they can get it done. I mean, you've had a stud pitching staff. You've got Kyle Schwarber, Bryce Harper, Trey Turner. I mean, that's a pretty good core. Nick Castellanos, he's not having a great year, and I guess he's only a platoon guy now, but he's had some big Octobers. So they have to get it done in Philly. I don't see any American League team really being a big favorite here, unless Texas does exactly what they did. I mean, that offense is potent if they can get there. But I think the World Series will come out of the National League, and the Dodgers are not good right now. I mean, they'll make the playoffs, but
they've been faltering. I think, you know, you look at the Brewers and the Phillies are probably the best teams over there. And I would give the Phillies the edge personally. And then over here, I mean, I agree with you. I think the Rangers can put it together. The Blue Jays are an exciting team. I think that out of those four teams, any one of those potential matchups, you know, would probably be a pretty good one to watch.
Yeah, that's right about the Blue Jays. I guess I discounted them, but they do have a pesky offense with a very good pitching staff. I don't know how Bieber's doing. I know he had a good first start there, but that's you've got Gausman and a couple others in there that are pretty sturdy. So
yeah, it looks like Bieber got tuned up his last two starts. His first two were good. His next two, not so much.
Okay. Well, maybe they'll figure it out. I mean, I feel like they have a pretty good pitching program in Toronto. Like, their starters just always really seem to shine. And I remember when Yusei Kikuchi arrived there from Seattle. I can't remember if that was a trade or a free agent move, but I thought, wow, he sucked in Seattle. And the AL East isn't where you go to get fixed. And they turned him into a strikeout machine. So we'll
most
see.
Definitely.
One thing we may as well. George White says Breslow stated we will be getting a GM probably in the offseason. And here's my response to that. And he's right. That is what was reported. I'm not knocking George, but here's my response to the report. Who wants to work for Craig Breslow? He's the smartest, dumbest guy in the room. And the front office, there were reports earlier in the year when things weren't really going well. Nobody likes him in the front office, apparently. I don't know if Alex Cora likes him. Maybe he does. I don't know. I feel like Cora seems to get his way with the roster more in the second half here. But I just, who thinks they have a future with Craig Breslow as your boss? Nobody wanted Breslow's job. Now you want to go work for Breslow? And Nightingale had a report right after the deadline that, or it wasn't a report, it was, he was on the Ken Rosenthal podcast where he said a lot of front offices in Major League Baseball says Craig Breslow is hard to deal with. So I'm skeptical about the GM thing.
It's going to be interesting to see. And I agree with you. I think whoever is willing to take the job, are they going to be better at making the decisions than what we currently have? That's the question, right? Is like the people who are better are probably going to wait and get more power somewhere else. You know, they'll probably get a better offer for another organization where they don't have to have, you know, the two-headed monster or three-headed monster, really a Cerberus of Sam Kennedy, Breslau, and, you know, John Henry kind of looking over their shoulder. And I guess you can add Cora to the mix.
Henry was at the game tonight. I was seeing him in the pregame, but yeah. And if you're Craig Breslow, the one thing you'd probably be afraid of is like, well, nobody likes me. Everybody's starting to like this guy.
Yeah.
Maybe he'll get my job, but yeah, I don't know. I'm still holding out hope that they all hate his guts and they get rid of him, you know? And if I'm not saying my camp, you know, is big, you know, with our followers and that, with that idea, but just remember, let's see, 2022, I forget his name, James Click did not return to the Astros after winning the World Series. So,
yeah. And that, I mean, I feel like if we do miss out on the playoffs, I mean, you've got to make big changes. You have to.
You could do it at that point. At that point, right now, I'd say 20% chance Breslow gets fired. If we miss the playoffs, I'd upgrade it to 50, and that's high, I would say. So,
agreed.
Yeah. So,
well, we can hold out hope. Any closing thoughts? I think we covered pretty much everything here.
Well, we'll see if Nick Eaton can bail him out tomorrow. That's the final hopefully thought.
That's really what we're counting on. And for Bayo to continue his legacy of just being a pretty good pitcher versus the Yankees. If only we had Roman Anthony on the other side of the ball, you know, I'd feel a lot more confident. But only time will tell. Hopefully, if we win tomorrow, then you've got to feel pretty good about potentially taking the series. If we lose, well, obviously we lost the series. So, still, hopefully you prevent the sweep. Until then, only one thing to do, and that's watch the games. I've been Nick, joined by Terry. We have been the Bastards of Boston. Thank you, everyone, for watching, chatting, listening. We do appreciate it. Let's go Red Sox. Take care.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.